Hey guys, it's The Great Debates, and we're back with another episode. We've got some guests in the Great Debates studios with us today. Our old friends John Mayer and BJ Novak are back with us again. Guys, welcome.
Thanks, Medina.
To the studio.
Hey, everybody.
I mean, surrounded by friends, it's the holidays, I'm feeling great.
This is my favorite part of Great Debates, is the holiday time gather, and the debate is full of a little
cheer.
I'm going
to one-up you. This is my favorite part of the holiday season.
Oh!
It's the Great Debates Christmas special.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to waste any time.
Let's jump right into it.
That is so like
I've got a topic. A
lot of hot debaters.
Do we have teams that we want to take on this one?
Yeah.
Should we just do sides of the table?
Yeah, sure.
What's our topic?
The topic is going to be Donald Trump has a therapist.
Yeah, this is sides of the table. Mm-hmm. For our listeners at home, Healy and BJ are on one side of the table, and John Mayer and Dave King are on the other side, right?
That's
correct.
Does that sound good to everybody? Let's jump in. Do we need a timer, or are we just going to let it roll?
Let's just let it roll. The people want to hear it.
Hey, I'm Steve Healy, and I'm going to be taking the pro with my friend BJ, and I'm going to let him kick it off because I think he's the kind of guy who can perfectly explain why it's obvious that Donald Trump has a therapist.
Sure. Now, none of us knows for sure. There's confidentiality rules regarding psychiatry and doctor-patient and everything, so all of us are speculating, but there is better evidence to suggest that he does have a therapist than that he doesn't. First of all, he's very wealthy. Second, he lives in Manhattan. His daughter is Jewish, converted, married a Jewish guy. So all of these, if I told you there's a billionaire in Manhattan, complicated guy, smart guy, he's an author of several books, he is in a part of a Jewish family, is that the kind of guy who is a therapist or doesn't? You'd immediately expect there's a very good chance he is a therapist. So those are just the stats.
The best. Bring me the best therapist.
That's the other thing.
I need therapy.
So here's another thing. I'm sure Donald Trump has the best doctors in every field he could. He probably signed up for some plan, and probably various doctors referred him to the best doctors in other fields, and one of them was probably a psychiatrist. Probably some of them saw that he could use therapy. We all could, and he was a very interesting guy. He may have wanted medication at some point. He may have wanted a sleeping pill. There's a lot of reasons that any good doctor, and Donald Trump, we know, must have a good gastroenterologist, et cetera. Any good general practitioner would have found an excuse under perhaps some other pretext to refer him to a therapist. Then Donald Trump likes to talk. He would have talked and talked.
She's
and said,
excellent. Dr. Susan Edelstein.
I love this woman.
She's I'm amazing. Going back.
You got to meet her.
She loves listening to me.
And then I'll give you...
Very insightful woman.
So none of us know this. Trump. These are very good reasons to assume. And then the topper, as an outsider watching this, this is a man who is very in touch with his anger, very in touch with his emotions. As someone who has been in and out of therapy over the years, these are things that take a lot of therapy for most complicated people to get in touch with, to be able to say, I hate so-and-so. We need to do this or that. A lot of us hedge and have these things come out in other ways. This is a man who builds buildings, says who he loves, says who he hates, says his ambitions. This is a sign of someone, for better or worse, who goes to therapy.
I got to jump right in there. It's John here. You said we don't have the evidence to know for sure. Well, we do have the evidence to know for sure that he does not have a therapist. And that evidence is that he is a narcissist. Mm. And it has long been known psychologically that narcissists are impossible to get into therapy. They don't believe anything is wrong with them. Narcissists do not commit suicide, by the way, too. This is a well-known fact. Narcissists do not commit suicide. I guess one would imagine they don't believe the world could
move on without them. What a loss it would be for everyone
else.
I'd love to.
If Donald Trump has a therapist, he's never seen that person, but gives that therapist to other people and says, you're crazy, you need to see a therapist.
That's right.
So if
the name of a person refers to...
You have to see Dr. Edelstein, there's no help.
Because it's so undermining to that person. You're a crazy person. You got to see Dr. I got someone for you. And he like writes it down real heavy with a pencil on a piece of paper and hands it to them.
He has George write it down on a piece of paper. That's the guy from The Apprentice, his right-hand guy.
Gotcha.
John is 100% right here. I agree. I would add to that that he's some combination of narcissist sociopath. I think he has strong sociopathic or psychopathic tendencies. This is a guy who wants his name on every building. He's attracted to shiny objects, big buildings, primal animals, gold. These are all characteristics of someone who fully believes in their own ego is 100% valid. This is not someone who does any sort of self-introspection.
Exactly. Donald Trump would never sit on the couch and pose the question to someone else, do you think I'm a little too this or that?
Exactly. I can't even imagine him saying that.
He's given a ton of thought to who he is, how he became what he is. He's written several books, Trump, The Art of the Deal. He loves inspecting himself.
Donald Trump is a living embodiment of what happens if you don't question.
He gets a therapist in there and he's like, I need the greatest therapist to come in here and help figure out how I'm making this amazing machine tick.
I don't think you believe the argument that you're putting out there. He knew from a young age what made him tick. It's not like he had a... It's not like he didn't write books about himself or write articles about himself or give speeches about himself until he was 50. Since the time he was basically a young man, he's been saying, here's the Donald Trump way. I'm amazing. Everything I do is right. Listen to me. One commonality of people who go to therapy is that there's a language that you'll often hear them use. And I just mean like certain code words that you often can either guess or assume people heard in therapy for the first time. And Donald Trump...
Wait, give us the code.
I guess it'd be something like...
I know you say projecting.
Yeah.
Maybe
I'm just projecting even just saying something as simple as like, and it took me a while to realize that or something
right.
like that.
You've never heard Donald Trump say it took me a while to realize that.
All he does is double down on his lie, not necessarily his lies, but what he believes to be truths.
Yes. It's double down. What do you count
couples therapy, joint
therapy?
He's been made to go to couples therapy, clearly. We all agree he's been made to go to couples therapy, and it's very likely he felt that person liked him and understood him better and continued to go.
Well, that's okay. So a couple things here. It's pretty rare for people to see a couples therapist and then to go continue to see that person after the couple is broken.
That's my therapist, actually.
Okay. Well, I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying it's unusual. The other thing is that I don't see him even agreeing to go to couples therapy.
He couldn't. Well,
I actually think, to go back, if I may, John,
with that
sorry,
money at stake, I'm sure he went both
divorces.
Well,
he called his lawyers. He's not calling a therapist.
I'm sure that he thought he'd get a better deal.
I think Donald Trump
went
thinks
to therapy.
He's the therapist for other people, sure, by saying, right, you're crazy.
You know, does someone in Trump's employ, have they sneakily brought a psychologist onto the team and
of
said
course.
He's like,
if he
he's
has
your coach.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't think they have. Even if they did, I would say that does not qualify as Donald Trump has a therapist.
That's right.
I would say that qualifies as someone has, in a clandestine fashion, given Donald Trump a therapist.
Going to therapy implies self-actualizing yourself as someone who needs therapy and getting yourself in the car and going. Can you see Donald Trump picking at the bottom of his shoe as his leg is sort of crossed, talking, going, looking off to the side? I don't know.
I'm going to give a gut check to everyone. If you saw on Gawker a book proposal that was going to be published soon that said, I was Trump's therapist, would anyone's thought be bullshit? Or would you just think everyone's writing a book?
Well, I'll say this. My first question would be, how long was this guy Donald Trump's therapist? It seems very unlikely to me that he ever had a therapist.
My first move would be to Amazon.com.
If Donald Trump has a therapist, he doesn't have one yet, but he's been given a number and his voice is hoarse and he's going, I'll call him next week. Donald Trump may have the number of a therapist in his phone that he looks at every once in a while then thinks, not tonight.
Is that the secret timer? You were timing?
I put a timer on, guys. Secret timer.
Oh, man.
The debate would never end.
Wow.
We could talk about this all night.
We really could. It's so
and
juicy.
We've got a million topics to get through.
Okay. God.
We're on it.
Whew.
I'm going to side with the pro on this one.
What? That's insane.
Wow. I put the timer on because I thought we were getting our ass kicked.
Yeah. We want it.
I think, again, a narcissist cannot go to therapist by definition of being a narcissist. But a narcissist
can be sent to therapy.
For one time and they get up and they leave and never go back.
Yeah, totally.
So are you agreeing he's a narcissist?
I don't know enough. I wouldn't be surprised.
You know, here's what I think. You mentioned, I'm sorry, I don't want to extend the debate, but I guess I do a little bit. The thing you said about how he's got the best doctors in the world and everything, I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't even really believe what his doctors say. If he goes, yeah. You know, that okay, that's fine that you think I have high blood pressure, but trust me, people in my family have dealt with that. It's not going to kill me, and I know how to deal with it myself.
I think he's absolutely right.
Yeah, that's so, yeah. That's my take. That's on it. I mean, look at the way the guy handles himself with the press. He clearly ignores every piece of advice that he gets from anyone in his campaign, from pundits, from his friends. I'm sure he just... he wings it. He acts off the cuff at all times.
He is forward only.
Yeah, it's like that's right. He's a shark.
Just forward only.
Okay, it's entirely likely that he ignores the advice of a therapist every single week.
Let me
life.
Pop in and ask John and BJ, our guests. Okay, you have been hired by Donald Trump to be his advisors, and you are genuinely trying to help him. What's like a one or two sentence piece of advice you would give him?
Go to therapy, yeah.
Just so you guys could win the debate? That seems
shallow. I would say, you know you don't know where you are anymore. You've got one last shot here to save your career. Figure out a way to turn this into one big goof. You know, he did turn the original Mexican immigrant statement into a goof. He got out of it, goof and I didn't think he would, by suing Univision for $500 million, which is a Dr. Evil thing to do.
Yeah.
And then I just thought he was over at that point, and then he sued Univision for $500,000. We like Donald Trump as a professional wrestler.
Yeah,
and I would
say we've got to get you back
to professional wrestler. So you're going to have to abandon the presidency, do something so crazy that brings everyone back to this guy's a freak. We can't.
You know what
we can't
do?
Waste our
the
energy.
The night he resigns, he should announce his album.
Correct. Something like that. Yeah.
And then everyone's like, that's what this was? This was different.
There is still hope for
an album?
But only if he turns it into an absolute goof that has to go so... Yeah. It has to become so meta and transcendent that we love him again.
Concert tickets are on sale.
Right, right.
I have a pitch for him. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Which is that he should... He's got to do this while the iron's hot. He can't do this before he bows out. Turn... his search for a vice presidential candidate into a apprentice-style TV show.
Great idea.
And
he should do it now.
He should. Yeah. I gotta call him. This is a winning idea.
If Donald Trump's campaign were a guy driving who missed a turn and his girlfriend was in the car and the girlfriend kept saying, just ask for directions, where would he be? But he would be up the side of a mountain.
No.
He would be in so Calistoga. Far off. So this is a guy who I think within days is going to have to admit that he doesn't know where he's running out of places to turn, I feel like. I feel like today was the first day, and this is the day where he actually gave a hello wave that the press has found and made sort of a hail sort of salute out of, and they're comparing him to Hitler. Comparing someone to Hitler is when you know you may have lost the plot.
Possible misstep. I think we should start a consulting company that's called Goofy Exits. You get yourself into a deep public relations jam, and we get you out.
It's funny scandal. That's what it is.
It's a funny scandal.
Comedy scandal, basically. It's not a terrible
idea. I love what that business card looks like.
Because humor is always the way you get out of a scandal.
It is a huge help. For a lot of people.
Not really. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Dan, help us out here. Moderate.
Well, hey, look, there's some hot debate action. Normally we would pause for like a host chat thing, which I think we could do tonight, but why don't we just do another debate?
Great.
Yeah, I love that.
Sure. Awesome. We're hot.
That's why we're
pistol
here.
Hot.
It's the holiday season. Fuck yeah.
So earlier this week, we put a call out on the List app for some topics.
Yep.
We're all on the List app. And if you guys aren't on the List app, you should check us out.
We got to say a bit about the List app. BJ created this app. He loves lists. He's always loved lists. He got some guys together. They made an app. It's awesome.
Great
you can
app.
Go on there and get lists.
Very tight app.
A bunch of amazing people are. Lena Dunham's listing. This is what I do on Sunday. Everybody's going crazy. Right?
That's
good. Yeah. The List app.
I think that's it.
Yeah.
There's no better way to describe it than Lena Dunham's on there going, this is what I did on Sunday. Yeah. Everybody's going crazy.
So we threw up some topics of our own, and then we invited people out there to suggest topics to us. I just wanted to read a couple of sort of runner-up topics, and then we'll use one of those submitted topics to do our next debate. L.
Paula N. Suggested the topic, nothing matters because everyone dies.
Well, she's right. We don't need to debate that because she's correct.
That's sort of the debate over
we all know that's true. We all know everyone dies, and yet we
well, then why get a haircut? Matter, it's just going to grow out.
Yeah, well, for instance.
Okay. So that's just a brief glimpse.
That's a brief glimpse of what
that could have been. These are debate previews.
Sarah G. Suggests the topic, skinny chefs are not to be trusted.
Disagree. A lot of anorexics are really into cooking. And
Thomas Keller, very thin, man.
Thomas Keller, very thin.
Yeah. Okay, so that could have gone a couple of ways.
Yeah. Patrick C. suggested the topic, Bernie Sanders has had more sex in his lifetime than Donald Trump.
Right. Which is a great topic. We already had a Trump one.
I side with the pro.
He's
on
so
that.
Much lustier and more physical.
What? He, yeah. I think, wrote erotic poetry.
He did as a college student.
He's up there in Vermont hippieing it out, covered in mud.
He's been married for years, hasn't he? Do we think that means more sexual partners? Relationships have more incidence of
more sexual encounters, just more orgasms,
a more total sexual incidence,
more female spurred orgasms.
Well, that's another debate.
Yeah. Well, you're saying
that could be a different number.
Oh, you're saying he's had more sexual partners.
I think he may have had more sexual encounters, more sex than right. Donald Trump, but. If you're going by the female orgasm,
I'm not talking about the female.
I would definitely put Bernie
Sanders. Bernie has definitely produced more female
orgasms. Bernie's a socialist.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Bernie. Socialist versus narcissist.
Donald Trump would be too drunk to finish and blame the woman.
Yeah.
You know, I knew a woman who actually dated Bernie Sanders briefly, and she said she couldn't climax when they had sex. You know why? His penis leaned too far to the left.
Very nice. Very nice.
I just made that up.
That's not
terrible.
That's great.
That's not terrible.
That was very good.
That was beautiful.
And right, the listeners couldn't experience that I got
and
to.
You used to write for Carson Daly.
Yes.
Right?
The look of joy in your eyes as you sort of walked us into that.
I loved it.
I knew where it was going.
I loved it.
I had a fun time.
So, how do we want to do teams for this debate? Do we want to switch things up or keep
well,
it?
Well, I'm taking the con, whatever it is.
Me okay. and Dave have decided we're going to team up and be con.
Oh,
the
I
con.
Like
is this right. the first time we've ever done this?
Yeah.
On the same side?
Yeah, I'm psyched. Yeah.
History.
And I'm honored that you would choose this to be the time to unveil this.
All right.
So, John,
okay,
we're up against the original.
So, our guests, John and BJ, are going to take
this
the pro.
This is Batman versus Superman here.
On this topic. And our hosts are going to take the con.
Meaning that Batman and Superman, you just know they're going to team up at some point in that movie. I don't mean this is really...
They're Batman and Superman, and we're two friends of Batman and Superman.
Two friends of Batman.
We fight them suddenly.
We come over every once in a while.
You've been invited to Batman and Superman's podcast.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Thank you. Sorry to talk over you.
So, Scott S., thank you for submitting this topic. The topic is, and the pros are going to start, truck drivers have it all.
Oh, man. Good luck, guys.
Sure. I'll start us off. I was in a movie about Walt Disney, and I learned that Walt Disney, for all his success, had a brother who was a postal worker, and he got home every day at 6 o'clock, tucked his children into bed, had a brandy, went to sleep with his wife, had a much happier life, in Walt Disney's opinion, than Walt Disney. I believed him. I believed this story. I believe that his brother did have it all. This postal worker in Missouri probably did have it all in human terms, what we consider it all. And Walt Disney, while he made more and did more and had more of the material and experiential variety of life, he didn't have it all. If we were to define what having it all is, it is love, stability, a long life, things like that. The truest, best things in life that can be had, were had more by Walt Disney's brother, by Walt Disney's own admission. And I, as someone who is also driven to have and get as much as you can, more like Walt Disney in that way, I think that comes from a lack of inner contentment and peace. And I think it's also exciting and a good thing, but I think it means you don't have it all. You'll probably never have it all if you're driven to always try to get more. Anyway, I think a truck driver has tunes, a truck driver has the road, a truck driver has good, simple square meals, wherever the truck driver goes, a truck driver has freedom, and a truck driver has a job, so the truck driver is not going to be lacking for shelter or food or any of the other essentials. I think these days, especially with satellite radio, truck driver has it all.
Okay, I don't know. I'm overwhelmed with things to attack.
Yeah, same.
Let me just start with a personal anecdote. I rode once with a truck driver from Chicago to Ontario, California, delivering a truckload of inedible fatty acids. And we slept in the cab of the truck, and I saw the truck driver life. And listen, this guy was a man of faith and a family man, and he was content to have the harmony of the road. It kept him calm. But aside from that, the truck driver's life is one of horrible toil and misery.
Well, let me ask you this, Eli. Yeah, there's really only one question you have to answer.
Yeah.
Did he have it all?
No. No, 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 no.
What didn't he have?
He didn't have good, nutritious food. Uh-huh. That was terrible. The best thing he could get was eating at Subway.
Was his posture terrible? Did he have a way to exercise?
He lost pieces of his fingers because what people don't know about these truck drivers, they got to unload and unload the stuff. Oh, when you get there, like you don't just sit in the truck and take a nap. You got to be unloading all that stuff.
Did he have friends?
He had pretty much his wife and like every once in a while. His
sounds awful.
His longing for company was very clear. He was happy to have me ride along.
He didn't have company?
No.
Guys, I'm a musician. I'm a touring musician. I've toured 15 years of my life on the road. I know truckers. I can't say I've ever actually spent a night in the truck itself, but I can tell you that more than ever now, today, trucking is luxurious. What I mean by luxurious, I mean all of the downsides of the road are insulated from a trucker. Yes, you are technically not home, but BJ is correct. And satellite radio is only the beginning of the luxuries that are available now on the road. You've seen the sleeper. I think you are really discounting what the amenities are for a trucker inside of his cab. There is a place to sleep. There's a television. There's not just satellite radio. You can't deny that there is satellite television as well.
What home? Well, I can deny that in a lot of trucks, there probably isn't satellite television.
There is satellite
television. That's by choice.
There is. Have you seen these truck stops? Have you seen the truck stops with showers?
Every time I've seen one, I've loved
how it looked.
And I have wanted to know.
We're not joking.
I've always thought it looked cool. I really have.
Cool, maybe. This is insane.
Let's get deeper. Like, I mean, you guys are. You can bring your wife. You're celebrities. Do you long for the simple life or something?
Yeah. You can bring your wife. I was at a truck wash.
How many of them bring their wives?
Were you at the truck wash with me? Were we going to Palm Springs that day?
What the fuck is
it was
going
me
on
and
right
Jared,
now?
Me and Lee. It was me and our friend Lee went to a truck wash to wash my RV. And next to us was a truck.
Uh-huh.
And it was a truck driver. And in the passenger seat, on the passenger seat door, beautiful pinstripe, sort of Bakersfield, California style, it said, co-pilot Alicia. And Alicia was the truck driver's wife. They drove together.
That's the saddest thing I've ever heard.
How can that be sad?
They didn't. They don't have. I mean, what are they doing?
He said.
What are they doing with their
lives? He's sleeping. She's driving. They're rotating. It's just their grind.
Well, actually, when you say they're rotating, that is a pro for me in my case because they are rotating, being on the road and being off the road. They buy the truck, and the truck is the investment. And then that's a small investment based on what they reap as a return on that. By working, I would say half of the year, they're on the road. He gets to bring his wife. I've seen truckers with their dogs.
Gets to. That's a pro.
Seen truckers I'm with kidding. Their dogs. Seen happy truckers. They've got a great life. They've got it all. They've got their music. One need only point to the song "Truckin'" by the Grateful Dead.
Zach, John, well, you're on tour with the Dead. You're a musician.
Truckin' got my chips cashed in.
About, we have to point out.
This is what you're romanticizing.
We have to point out
a long,
the
strange trip
here,
indeed,
which is that the trucking that you guys are talking about is vastly different than the average American truck driver experience.
No,
that's not
which
true.
Is,
it's getting better and better. John, you're a musician. Let me ask you.
Wait,
is there a song called Keep on Truckin'?
Well, there's a song called Truckin'.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is there a song called Stop Truckin'?
No. Oh, there's a saying, Keep on Truckin'.
Yeah, that's
it's a
what
very
I,
well-known
I'm
70s
sorry,
Keep on Truckin'.
Is there a saying, Stop Truckin'?
I will
I've never heard of anyone
that the,
say Stop
the
Truckin'.
The best thing about trucking is locking into the truckin' music and the truckin' that kind of
thing.
There's also, the
look, I wish I had examples, but there. I believe there's also a history of like the country song about a trucker who is away from his family. Again, I don't
sure,
have examples.
There's
but
businessmen are
businessmen
away from your family.
But there's a reason that that's a cliche. Yeah, businessmen don't have it all either. Here's some of the other things that truck drivers don't have. Health, as we said before, they have constant back pain. So many of them smoke.
I have back pain.
And don't have access to good nutrition. I don't smoke. They don't have a creative outlet. They have to sit in their car all day. What about their
CB radio? Have you seen the CB radio? It's brilliant.
CB radio is, compared to other forms of communication, vastly inferior. What do we have right now? A table with microphones where we're able to talk with our friends whenever we want. We have it all. Truck drivers have a CB radio where if you're like in the right area, you can reach out to a guy you don't even know.
There's internet CB.
That's what I'm saying. Maybe 50 years ago, there's no outlet. Now, what's the difference between a trucker's blog?
Again, having internet CB doesn't mean having it all.
Let me pose it to you this way. What does everybody want? What are the two things everybody wants that are in constant conflict in their life?
One, they want the comfort of home. The first thing is, I want to not have to drive a truck for a living.
It was a rhetorical question, Dave. It was a rhetorical question.
Comfort of home?
They want the comfort of home, yet they also want the freedom of seeing the world.
Yeah, but they're rarely at home, and they don't get to see the world. So many of them drive their home every day.
They made the truck their home.
That's sad. That sucks. Trucks aren't meant to be homes. They're meant to be trucks.
No, trucks are very homey.
Most truck drivers aren't.
So are homes.
But homes, you can't see the world from your home.
But you can travel. Truck drivers aren't like, it's not like they're traveling. Oh, I got to be, I'm truck driving from San Diego to Houston. I'm going to stop in Taos, New Mexico for a while. Going to go down to Sedona, check out the views.
The boss won't mind if I go up to Carlsbad Caverns.
That's not what truck driving is. You're on the highway all the time. The American highways are disgusting and in need of repair.
No, that is true.
It's dangerous. That's another thing they don't have is safety.
How about when you've been on the highway and you've seen that, you got a trucker's pull over for the scale. How relieved are you when you just whoosh,
go right by that stuff?
And your trucker, oh my God, what if I'm 20 pounds over? I get the ticket. Now I lost my day's wages.
How about trick-or-treaters?
Trucker treaters?
No, when you're home. Trick-or-treaters. You don't have to deal with that. It's a one day out of the year argument. But that's where we're going to start and work out from. We're going to build out from there.
Okay.
You get to meet people. You get to hear their stories.
You get
to meet
guys who are just like you.
Not just like you. What a confining statement.
You used to work for Werner
that all
out of Huntsville?
Truckers are the same.
Yeah, I used to work for that.
All truckers must be the same. They must have the same point of view.
I've been going to pilot. Let me
ask you this, John. If you were to guess whether Steve Healy or a truck driver drawn randomly from the population of America had met a more diverse group of people, who would you guess?
The truck driver.
The truck driver. Crazy. They're only meeting people at truck stops.
This table is who Steve knows.
Have you ever been to a truck stop?
Not
you
true.
Ever walked into a truck stop?
Yeah, of course.
It's like the Star Wars cantina in there.
So the Star Wars cantina is diverse. There are people from so many different countries. You've got people from Kashyyyk. I'm sure more than Wookiees come from Kashyyyk. Okay. This is Star Wars language. Okay. I'm sure that you. I've got a lot. I can keep going. So the point is, we all walk into truck stops. Truck stops are not just for truckers only. The showers are. I've learned that the hard way.
Yep.
And by the way, you can get sex at a truck stop.
You can get.
You ever heard of a lot lizard? You know what a lot lizard is?
What was the sex scene like in the restroom?
A lot lizard. That sounds sexy.
Do you know what a lot lizard is?
Yeah, it sounds real sexy.
What was the sex scene like?
I'm not going to argue that. I'm not going to argue that comedy writers have it all. That's not what we're here to argue. I don't even have to say that my life is better than a truck driver's because I would never say that. But truck drivers have it all. Hell no.
I think John hit it on the head. The two fundamental needs of a person are stability.
Not to drive a truck.
Stability and freedom.
To make a lot of money. And home, truck drivers have needs.
And the journey.
I think being hugely dismissive of truck drivers.
Serial killer's career doesn't include a period of killing truck drivers? It's part of all of them. That's like a constant danger.
Yes, but that's such a small danger. I love the idea of like, yes, that's true. But
I've never taken a road trip of more than, let's say, 5 hours.
What?
I haven't finished.
Oh,
I've never taken a road trip more than 5 hours and not thought to myself, God damn it, when is this going to be over? And I'm in the luxury of my own car, goes faster than a truck.
I do 10 hours at a clip.
Also, what about when you guys are talking about the truck drivers on the highway? What about when, now I'm pulling into Bakersfield. I got to deliver these lettuces to Ralph's.
You guys are so coddled.
57th Avenue. How do I back it up? The car's honking at me.
Yes, you have to use your hands. Yes. First of all,
yeah, that's a nightmare.
You don't have to unload the whole thing yourself. You do not have to unload the whole thing yourself.
Kids want to drive trucks. It's a primal thing.
Medina,
the guy was missing parts of his fingers. That's the argument right there. He didn't have He didn't have his fingers.
You guys aren't road dogs.
This guy didn't have it all. This guy had most of it.
You guys aren't road dogs.
This guy was one of America's road team captains, an ambassador for trucking.
You've driven 10 hours is about where you start having the trade-off, right?
There's probably a lot of truckers hearing this podcast right now on the road.
I
would love them to write in.
I would like to say
greatdebate69@gmail.com. Is that right?
I'm dying to crack into that trucker market.
I am so glad I'm on the pro.
If they write in, they'll decide this.
Guys, let's get to closing statements here. I think I'm ready for some closing statements. Let's have the pro go first.
Go ahead, pros.
There's two guys sitting in the back of the dark room on Melrose. One of them is a comedy writer. The other guy is sipping his whiskey straight. He's got no chaser. He's got no ice. He's got a cowboy hat tipped just a little bit over his hairline. You want to talk to the comedy writer or you want to talk to the trucker? Who do you want to talk to?
And I will take it one step further. If each of them turns to you at a point in the conversation and says, I have it all, which one do you believe?
Well, neither of them. Obviously, neither of them.
That is a very strong closing argument.
Healy, what are you doing?
I mean, that was a good point. But I think
team, dude.
I think a lot of the poetry and romance that surrounds truck driving is like the poetry and romance that surrounded sailors and sea shanty guys and railroad guys. It's like when you have a miserable life of toil, the one thing that you do have is pride in your trade. That's what you're seeing in the truck driver who says, I really have it all. He thinks, I have no material comforts, but I've gotten to this higher spiritual level. Myself, I'll take the material comforts.
Here's my closing. I'll add to that this little thought experiment. Let's say you have a son and he grows up to the ripe old age of, let's say he's 35. And he says, Dad, I finally figured out what I want to do. I'm going to be a truck driver because I want to have it all. Now, why are you guys laughing at that? Truck drivers have it all, don't they? What's
they
the problem?
They have it all.
That's my closing statement.
Very strong.
Very strong.
Medina, what'd you think?
Oh, man, it's a tough call for me because I'm a committed, road tripper.
Yeah.
I've driven, 30,000 miles this year
for free.
Exactly. Without even taking a paycheck for it. I drove across the country. I've driven to Northern California, top to bottom, 3 or 4 times.
Be careful when you make your hobby your job, right?
Well, exactly. I would say, there's a big difference between if you had been paid for it, it would have been much less enjoyable. And you wouldn't have been able to go to the places you wanted to go to.
Probably true.
Guys, I'm going to leave you with this lyric by the great Robert Hunter, as performed by the Grateful Dead in the song Truckin'. Most of the cats that you meet on the streets speak of true love. Most of the time, they're sitting and crying at home. One of these days, they know they better get going. Out of the door and down on the streets all alone.
I think there's also a part where it says living on Reds, vitamin C, and cocaine. So, pluses and minuses there.
Hey, I would like to say we'd love to hear from any truck drivers who are listening. Email us.
GreatDebate69@gmail.com
on Twitter.
If you're a trucker and you're listening to this, and I you do write in, I think what you should do is write roses and thorns. What's the best thing about being a trucker and what's the worst thing about being a trucker? And I think that you guys, if you do get that kind of correspondence, should read it at the appropriate time on one of the great debates
and
in the future.
By the way, whether you have it all or not, we're real grateful to you for trucking everything every which way.
You know what happens when you open a thing of pears at Costco and it says product of Ecuador? How do you get your pears? How do the pears from Ecuador get to your house?
A trucker who
truckers.
Has it
truckers.
Well, if you read The Wonder Trail, coming in June 2016 by one Steve Healy, you may learn a little more about our relationship to Ecuador.
A little tease there for the listeners.
This debate was brought to you by Audible. Audible.com.
By Audible.
Who needs to read?
I did read an advanced copy of The Wonder Trail. It is my favorite travel book that I've ever read.
Oh my gosh. What a compliment.
So good.
Word up to you for being a 10-hour road dog. 10 hours where I start. You know about the White Rabbit?
No, tell me about the White Rabbit.
Yeah, that's the White Rabbit. When you start seeing the White Rabbit is when it's time to hand the wheel over.
Yeah, that's when you have to
hand
it over.
What
does that mean? I have seen the White Rabbit.
You start hallucinating. You start seeing the White Rabbit. Here's the hardest part of trucking, and I'm really feeling a kinship with Medina right now. Edit this out if you like.
Everyone does.
Everyone would like to.
He's kin. He's kin.
Here's the hardest part of a road trip is when the sun goes down. Mm. For the moment, there's a moment where the sun crests over the horizon, and you the other way, not towards you, and it starts to get this weird mix of dark and light, and then the display on your dashboard starts to get weirdly bright, and then you have this strange sort of like visual dissonance. Have you ever experienced this?
Yes, of course.
You have to what I do is I turn the display all the way down on the dashboard, and I just open the windows up. For that 30 minutes, it's very strange when you go from daylight to nighttime, because it's a strange transition into nighttime when you drive. But
yeah, too early for light, but there's not quite enough of
it. It's very strange. The eyes get strained in a weird way. But road dogs everywhere, we salute you.
When I go out on the road and I do a road trip, when I'm headed back, I think to myself, geez, when can I just turn around and go back out again?
Mm-hmm.
I
know. It's
very trains, American, right?
It trains the brain road, yeah. to work in larger chunks, right? Mm. Here's another John Mayer road dog tip for you.
Please.
And Medina has not heard this, and I think he's gonna chant wildly an amen here. Whatever your first clip of driving is before you stop for the first time is your unit of it's your clip of time. If you stop in the first 45 minutes, you're doing 45 minute stops the whole way.
Yeah, you set a pace.
You got it. It's like punching the biggest person in prison on the first day.
Yeah.
You got to rip off four hours in the first go, right?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Love that.
Of course. Yeah.
Now you're working in 4-hour clips. Yeah. That's how you drive.
You know, that's how Mitt Romney ended up leaving his dog on the roof of the car, right? No. You remember that?
Yeah, but that's a horrible way to support this thing.
Well, they had a rule, no stopping. There was one stop, and they didn't stop.
Well, okay. So stop every once in a while to make sure there's not a dog.
Also, just don't drive at all with a dog on.
Yeah, don't put the dog on the roof.
Before you start, take the dog off.
You know what I would do every once in a while? Go, want a treat? And if you don't hear anything, your dog's on the roof.
Okay, so John Mayer's road dog tips: make sure there's no dog on your roof.
Make
then
sure,
drive as hard as you can.
Make sure there's
no
dog on the roof is more of a pre-travel check.
That's a check.
There
not
are different priorities. It's more of a pre-drive checklist.
Yeah.
On the Sunday after Thanksgiving, I drove back to Los Angeles from Napa, from St. Helena in Napa. I started at 6 in the morning. The first thing I did was watch some hot air balloons take off from the town of Yountville in Napa. And then I decided that rather than like slug it out on the 5 for 8 miserable hours, I would just drive the coastline, and I drove the 1 all the way back to Los Angeles.
Pismo Beach, say hello.
Yeah, San Luis Obispo. Amazing, it's beautiful.
First castle.
What I learned is that one of the top 10 deathbed regrets for, I think, the population is white men, is that they didn't drive the California 1.
Wow.
All in one go.
Really? That's one of the top 10?
As opposed to the 5, which is a bit more cow dungy.
The 5 is number 8.
No one's ever regretted not driving
the 5.
Number
8 on the top 10 regrets.
Healy, I'm dying to know about how you ended up riding in a big rig truck from Chicago to Ontario, California.
Sure, yeah. I was,
is that to the airport in Ontario?
Yeah, where the airport is, yeah. Ontario, California, if you don't know, is a town like outside of LA, an hour and a half.
It's
or
famous
so.
For its airport and for being mistaken for Ontario, Canada.
Exactly, and for being the destination
it's
for
trucks.
It's
famous for emergency landings.
So I was having a race around the world against my friend Vali Chandrasekaran. The deal was I was going to go west, he was going to go east. You had to go all the way around the planet Earth without using airplanes. And so I'm like, I got to figure out a cool, interesting way to get across the United States. I get in touch with the American Trucking Association. I said, here's what I'm doing. Can you, I would love to experience this as a trucker experiences it. They're like, yeah, we'll hook you up with one of America's road team captains. Those are their like the top 10 truckers in the country.
Is this John Mayer's road dog trips? Or is
no,
this
is the
separate?
ATA.
This is the ATA.
This is the
road
ATA.
It's a competitive
So this is a road team, not a road dog.
Yeah. This guy had a million. The guy who drove me, Bob Burden, he was a great guy.
Sounds
he
great.
Had a million accident-free miles.
Wow.
Pretty good. And an accident is anything that affects the appearance of the vehicle. Like a stone flies up, hits your windshield. Yeah. That counts as an accident.
I actually own a very advanced truck. Own a very advanced RV called an Earth Roamer.
Mm.
Have you seen an Earth Roamer?
Mm-mm, I can't wait to look it up.
It's a very advanced truck. Go to earthroamer.com and check it out. What I give is about my truck's length of space between myself and the next vehicle is what I do, because I've got about 6,000 tons going on. I'm not 6 tons going. I've got
12,000
pounds going.
Yeah, that's some breaking distance.
So we've got to when I'm full of 85 gallons of fresh water and 90 gallons of diesel.
I'm living on Red's vitamin C.
More like beef jerky, meatball subs, and you know.
We got to take podcast. We got to road dog this podcast.
Hold on.
Hook up some mics on. But
let's finish the Healy story. So
yeah.
He has a million accident-free miles.
Yeah. And we're driving across. He agreed to take me on as a passenger, and we drove from Chicago to Ontario, California, trip of, I think it was 2 days, 3 nights or so. And along the way, he was like, he has a lot of theories about the Bible, this guy. And he had the whole Bible on
CD.
You
don't say.
Yeah, and he got it down, and he says, now I'm going to put this on, and I'm going to pause it frequently. And that's how we began a stretch that went from like Nebraska to Utah.
That sounds great.
Yeah, it was awesome. Does? I loved it. Yeah, he's a great, great guy. And he did have it all. I guess.
Can I tell you one more thing?
Did you feel like you had it all when you were with him?
Yeah. Faith.
Can I tell you one more thing? The road is exceptionally safe. There's another thing. The road is exceptionally safe. The road is only occupied by road dogs for the most part. And it's one of the last bastions of sort of, hey, brother, you traveling? All right. I've never been hassled my life on the road. Ever, ever, ever in my life. I've been hassled a lot by California State Park Rangers. They're the worst. You think you're going to go camping at Carpinteria for one night because you're tired. That is a whole ecosystem that you do not want to walk into without really understanding how to work it. But I've just never felt unsafe in my life on the road.
Would you rather be a truck driver or like completely. A train conductor?
I'm sorry?
A railroad engineer.
I you know.
Or a baseball player.
I will also say in today's trying times, the road feels safer than ever in comparison to static
locations.
That's right.
That's right. Nobody ever shot up a Quiznos at a Quick Stop.
Well,
we don't know that.
But thousands of fatal accidents on the road every day. Still more
guys,
dangerous.
Hey, debate's over. We're all friends. Guys, let me ask you a question. Have you ever, and you got to be very honest, have you ever seen a pretty gnarly roadside accident and thought to yourself, don't fucking text and drive?
I've both of those things separately a lot.
Yeah, but I mean, there's no way to know when you see an accident that it was definitively from
texting. I know, but have you ever just assumed that person was texting?
No.
You have, I'm guessing?
Yeah, I have, and I guess it's horrible to say that I've been driving.
Road dog tip three.
That's not a road dog tip.
Never text and drive.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I don't think truckers ever text and drive. But sometimes, okay, how about this? Do you think anybody's gotten in a fatal accident texting you two?
Texting what?
Texting back you two.
I think so.
It'd be the worst.
We had an interesting text possible debate topic. Whatever. I don't know if we want to go there. It was that...
We're in host chat now.
In host chat. It was that someone in the United States has been fired via a text using exclusively emojis.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. What do you think about that, BJ?
I think it's maybe just a funny topic.
I think con.
You think that has not happened?
I think con. Yeah, I think con. It's funny.
I would amend it, though. Something I have wondered is, has an executive dictated a memo involving emojis?
Yeah, they have to.
Then put that little guy.
Yeah, you know why? Because there's an emoji movie in the works. That's one of the reasons.
Yeah.
There's an emoji movie in the works.
Yeah, hell yeah.
I know somebody who's going to option that movie.
Really?
Yeah. Let me ask you this question, and this is a debate topic. Men should not use emojis.
Oh, that's absurd.
That's a whole
I'd love to con
set
that.
Of weapons in the arsenal.
I would love to pro
let's
this.
Do it. Let's do
oh,
it.
Oh, let's just go right now.
Rip it right
offended.
Now.
Offended.
To pro this.
John versus
right.
Dave. You guys can jump in wherever you want. Who wants to pro
got,
this with
you? You got BJ on the pro.
Men should not use emojis.
All right, go ahead. Start
now,
your
let me. Okay, let me just amend this really quickly by saying men can use emoticons, and there is a difference. Emoticons are an assy thing, A-S-C-I-I. You can use text. To send, you can use a text smiley from a man is fine. A colon and a closed parenthesis is fine. That is a masculine version of an emoji, which is a yellow smiley face that should never punctuate anything that a man says on text. Case in point, and then I'm going to hand it off to BJ.
Sure.
If a woman says to you, a girl you've been pining after, you've been lusting after, and she finally says, come over. Take a shower first, she says. If a guy writes the emoji with the two big open eyes and the blushed cheeks, I mean, you're just coming up with the weakest.
Yeah, men shouldn't use the wrong emojis.
I'm coming up with the most exemplary version of this. It's not the weak. What do you? The weakest? No, it's the weakest for you. It's the most exemplary for BJ and I. Men should never use emojis. Never, ever, ever, ever.
Okay, I definitely agree.
Let me back up the position here. This position is so strong that John was able to open with an exception that we didn't even need to claim, which is for emoticons. But if you include emoticons, it's even more of a decisive victory. If men, and I use emojis, but if you're saying men should not, would be better off without, absolutely. If you read in GQ or whatever definitive male manners publication of the time were to say men should not use emojis, you'd immediately say, Yeah, you're right. That's right. Yeah, that's right.
I've always felt weird about it.
If a girl is dating a guy and says he never uses emojis, none of her girlfriends would be like, there's something wrong with him. They'd all say, yeah, he's a man. He's a man. He says what he means. I'm not saying you should judge her for using emojis. Whether it's your sister, your daughter, or your girlfriend, you shouldn't judge anyone. But if you want to use a traditional masculine metric for what is a cool, manly thing to do? Use words. Just cool. Someone texts you an emoji of a winky face and then a dancing girl, and to imply maybe we should go dancing, say, dancing sounds great. Yeah. How about 10?
Yep.
That is a masculine, traditionally masculine way to handle a text exchange. And if you're going to go by old-fashioned etiquette, what makes someone have good manners that reflect well on them and serve them well in the wider world, men should not use emojis.
And you're absolutely right, because traditional masculinity would also tell us that if our wife doesn't clean the dishes, then it's perfectly okay to slap her in the face, because that's what we did for so long.
No, wait. There was never a time in America. There was never a time in American history.
You went slightly too far. Even where America was 100 years ago.
Do you remember that scene in the incredible Frank Sinatra documentary where it turns out that Frank Sinatra slapped women because the dishes weren't done? That was cool, right?
I'm not saying it was cool. They'd be like, Frank, for decades, that's wrong.
You know what they would say? You're being brutally frank.
Yeah, it's like you shouldn't go to jail, but that's wrong. That was America at its worst.
How about this? Don't overuse emojis. Don't use them all the time. I agree. Definitely don't send a blushy face. That's not a male emoji. But a man should have every tool in his arsenal.
Tell me when.
When it's funny. You know what, you guys? I'll take your if you want to be so misogynistic and as to go for traditional male roles.
There's no tradition in the new world of texting.
Emojis will help get you laid. I think girls like emojis.
I think
if you know how to use them, they can be funny, they can be charming, they
can
be
pandering.
Witty. If
you're pandering, that's the only reason you would use it is
pander
to pander
your way into her bedroom. Yeah, if that's what it's all about, guys, if it's all about being a traditional male, let me ask you some other questions that might make you have to think about this a little harder than you guys are probably willing to do. Is it okay for transgendered people to use emojis? And if so,
Think about that.
Is it okay for a woman becoming a man to use emojis?
Is it okay
for a man becoming a woman to use it? At what point does it become okay for a man who's transitioning into a woman? At what point does it become okay for her to use emojis?
Let me get real
close
up on the mic.
Before surgery, after surgery? Why are we so defined by these gender roles? It's 2015. Open up your eyes. This is absurd.
Here's a couple emojis I've used recently. The coffee emoji.
That's great.
Manly. That's great. The beer emoji. The turkey emoji on Thanksgiving.
Of course you did.
The American flag. The green heart.
This is a terrible case.
All of those are better words
than
emojis.
All of these are better words.
The mushroom.
Beer? Question mark.
Beer?
Coffee? Question mark. Happy Thanksgiving!
By the way, can I please answer this? If you are a male transitioning into a woman,
this is shameful.
You can use emojis. If you are a woman transitioning into a man, you should not use emojis. Why is this so hard to understand?
If you want to identify with a traditional gender ideal, that's all we're debating here.
Hey, how hard do you think it would be to teach
traditional ideal is?
A gorilla or a bonobo to use, say, a vocabulary of 50 emojis.
How hard compared to words?
Well, like you know how they taught Coco supposedly to speak
bonobo?
If you ask these guys, only if it's a female bonobo, apparently. Let me say this. I got to stick up for the guys who are in long-term relationships, because I find that emojis, I've been dating my love, for 3.5 years.
Hey, give her a shout out.
Yeah, a friend of the show, Little Esther. And I find that emojis are one of the best ways we have to communicate. They simply expand language. Are they corny? Are they a little cheesy? Sure. Is it like schmaltzy and romantic? Yeah, they can be. But they can also be funny. They're no different than just another set of words.
BJ, of all people,
a comedy writer should understand this is another tool at your disposal to be
funny.
I
love emojis. I use them all the time. But if someone said, hey, you're a guy, you shouldn't use emojis, I'd be like, yeah, you're right.
Okay,
yeah.
BJ, what about this situation? More about your gullibility, I think.
And gullibility?
Or just like willing to go along with a suggestion than anything else.
BJ, what is the least gullible for
those?
BJ is the least gullible person I know.
I'm a stubborn man.
Hypothetical, there's a woman whose ardor for you is quite strong and you want to cool her down. Is that okay to use emojis there to be like, I'm...
This might be a trick question, John.
No, it's not a trick question. Because
you said yes.
No, because yes, you'd be using theatrically, making yourself less appealing. You'd be
using her energies.
You would be using the theatrics of being less appealing.
What are you doing right now? You're sending her the pizza.
Just like a man might not shower. Just like a man would turn into a bad boy. Every man has said, I'm going to go in with my worst and turn this girl off. Look, I really want to brag. This. Yeah. Let me know when this is time for
Please
closing arguments.
I'm ready for closing statements.
BJ, you go for it.
I will start big picture, which is that let's talk about what we are debating here in an ever-shifting, ever more tolerant world. Okay. We are talking about what is the timeless male ideal that anyone, male, female, transitioning can emulate. In general, a lot of that has to do in masculinity and femininity, has to do with what is timeless. And timeless masculinity has to do with being simple and being clear. And
pick
those
a girlfriend.
Those are virtues of masculinity that are emulated by men, women alike, and anyone who identifies as anything. And the simple, timeless way to communicate is using words, and therefore, a man should not use emojis.
Yeah, a man should not use emojis.
A man does. Right. A man can.
But a man should
might
not
enjoy them. But a man should not, if we're talking
like a man,
about that.
Have you ever heard someone say, a man should not wear a blouse? You ever heard that saying?
No, but
Doesn't exist, because it's understood. Just like the understanding, a man should not use emojis. And let me bracket this. First of all, if a man picked up a woman if a man picked up a woman on the first date in an old Bronco or an old Land Rover Defender, he would win her favor because of his adherence to old classic norms. So let me also finish. I just want to finish this off. I'm sorry that I'm so handily upstaging you all, but I want to say, let's bracket this. Remember when I started this off at the guy, the girl says, come on over, and the guy has the emoji smiley face or sunglasses, like deal with it, whatever.
Sunglasses are like, that's cool. Come over.
What if the guy said, coming over? Send in text,
right.
Coming over. No, be there in 15.
That sounded creepy.
That's not creepy.
Well,
I'm not showering.
By the way,
the shower.
It's not in bold. There's no stars around each word.
I'm very dirty.
No, the only way to make it creepy is to put emojis in it.
Well, it depends on your previous relationship with the person.
There is no previous relationship.
If you've never come over.
Can I start the closing argument for the con team?
Start and finish.
BJ, you've fallen into perhaps the easiest trap that's ever been set on the great debates. Simple and clear is what men should be. Well, I submit to you that there's nothing simpler and more clear than the language of emojis. More like Japanese characters than English words they can say with one character what can't be said in 100 words. Which would you rather do? Send a text that says, well, I'd like to do that, but I feel a little sheepish about it. Or, more simply and clearly, send the emoji that represents that exact emotion. Would you rather say, I'd like to get sushi, I know a good place, or would you rather send the sushi emoji in a question mark? Simple, clear, masculine. By the way, here's my second point about all this, is that you ask, what are the things that are going to be timeless about masculinity? And I say the time is up for the timeless male ideal. We've moved past that. We've moved past, the era of Don Draper is long behind us. The era of gender, of binary genders, is behind us. What used to be traditional is now seems silly, outdated, archaic, and frankly offensive to a lot of people.
What used to seem traditional now is additional.
Conditional. That doesn't mean anything. Healy, anything to add? No, I thought that was a strong defense. Medina, what did you think?
You know, pros, I was almost there with you, but then Dave just delivered his
it was a very
Kodak carousel.
It was
incredible. Dave, I have to hand it to you.
Even I concede. I've changed my mind about it.
That's what we call a buzzer beater.
To you, my friend, I give the thumbs up emoji.
Thank you, John. I actually got to say, like, I was fairly swayed myself by BJ's like classic masculinity argument, and I think I'm going to go more that way, but like, I've also got, like, you know, my old friends, my sister. They can get an emoji.
Well, you're not trying to date your sister.
I think that it sort of hinges on the word should, right? And that's sort of what
that's
you're saying.
That's right.
Like a, there's an imperative
emoji
to
was a big word also.
And I think,
emojis,
I think what everyone's dancing around and what Dave used very persuasively, and I'd say cynically, to his, to his side's end,
proudly,
is the paradox of what do we do with gender norms in a time when genders are being chosen through an agency of individuals.
Why does Norm have to be a male's name? Why exactly. does gender Norm have... Why
so
does...
that is the question. How do you celebrate an ideal of a traditional ideal of a gender if you're also celebrating the freedom of the fluidity of it? It is a paradox.
It's tough. It's tricky times. Whew. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. For our listeners, John is holding up a sign that says dinner. I don't see the harm in sharing that.
No, there's no harm in sharing.
There's been a lot of drinking tonight before the dinner.
That's you a lot of drinking on this show.
Has this been the episode with the most drinking so far?
This is a high-level drinking. Okay, so we've been drinking a lot. I want to close the show, but briefly, before we do that, guys, it's the holiday season.
Yes. Thank you for reminding us.
We're hearing the music everywhere we go. And so I thought just we could do a quick, we could even do a timed micro.
Yeah, let's time a micro and close
dinner.
A timed micro.
Let's go back to a set of teams that hasn't been used before, actually. So we're going to have Dave and BJ and Steve and John.
Yes, my old buddy.
Take some teams.
It's a pleasure to be back on the team with you.
Dave.
Okay.
BJ, I look forward to winning with
you. I've got a couple of Christmas topics here. I'm just going to go ahead and choose one.
Okay. Great. Good man. Decisive.
And, this one has to be sort of conned as pro. So we're going to have to flip the script and...
You'll see what he means.
We'll take the pro.
Dave
we'll
and BJ are going to take...
It's a generally negative statement, right?
Yes.
Is that where you're going? All right, we got
Dave
this.
And BJ are going to take the pro. One last Christmas debate before we go. Chestnuts roasting on an open fire does not deserve to be called the Christmas song.
Of course it doesn't. It has nothing to do with the basic elements of Christmas. Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire is an exclusive song. By that I mean it excludes people who don't have fireplaces, who don't have access to chestnuts, and who don't enjoy chestnuts. And that's not the spirit of Christmas as I understand it. The spirit of Christmas is about inclusion. It's about gifts for everyone, rich, poor, white, black, male, female. Chestnuts Roasting on a Fire is there's so many better Christmas songs which I could name if I weren't raised in the Jewish faith where we didn't sing those songs. BJ, any thoughts?
Sure. I would compare it. I heard for the first time a lyric in a classic song, and I can't even remember what song it was, but it was a reference to figgy pudding.
Mm-hmm.
Does anyone know what song that was?
We'd like us some figgy pudding.
Yes, thank you.
Some figgy pudding.
And I thought figgy pudding? What?
Yeah,
figgy, and that has nothing to do with anyone's experience of Christmas these days.
Whoa, hold on.
That's
right,
it's outdated.
Update everything. Everything's under review.
We'd like some shimai and burritos.
What I'm saying is, clearly it was briefly synonymous with the Christmas tradition, but not generally, in the grand scheme of things, synonymous. The way that gifts, the way that the birth of Jesus, the way that
when was the last
snow,
time?
The way that family, the way that those things are synonymous. So, of course, a specific nut roasting over a specific type of fire.
Crazy.
These are not synonymous with something as major to such a significant population of the world as the day of Christmas.
Search just really quick.
It's such an easy win that I almost won a second topic.
Search your memory. When was the last time you heard this conversation? Hey, man, how was your Christmas? Oh, it was great. I had family over. We had goose and whatever. And
of course, we roasted chestnuts
on an open fire.
It wasn't a closed fire, by the way. It was dangerous.
It was open.
But it was worth it.
This year it was open. And we roasted them, the chestnuts, because that's what we like to do.
And they were great.
Go ahead, Conti.
Have you ever heard of the phrase, you snooze, you lose?
Yes.
Somebody had the forethought to write a song they thought really summed up the holidays. Does it? Not my business. I'm a songwriter, and it's not my business to climb into the skull of other songwriters and criticize them. But they decided to call it the Christmas song. Now, you'd have your case locked and loaded, slammed shut, if it was called Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire, and the world at large decided it should be called the Christmas song. The composer of the song decided it should be called the Christmas song.
That doesn't mean it deserves to be called the Christmas song.
From the songwriter's perspective.
A lot of songs have titles that you wouldn't expect them to have.
Yeah, or don't deserve to be had.
To you.
I don't think the Star Spangled Banner deserves to be called the national anthem.
What about all the songs you love where the singers are singing, you're perfect? Well, you're not perfect, but you still sing the song. Do I think that Chestnuts Roasting on Open Fire is the quintessential, most exemplary Christmas song? I don't. I think it's a part of a wonderful canon of Christmas songs.
What is the topic we're debating?
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire does not deserve to be called the Christmas.
Yeah, I'm in the con.
I sort of feel.
Does it deserve? Yes, it deserves to be called the Christmas song because it's called the Christmas song. Every song that has a title deserves to be referenced as that title's song.
Very literal interpretations.
You know what?
I don't like Adele's Hello. I don't think Adele's Hello deserves to be called Hello. I think it should be called The Other Side. I think it should be called The Other Side. It doesn't deserve to be called Hello. It is the artist's choice, my friend. And BJ, for you to be on the con. You're an artist. You have to, for you to just defect.
What side are people on? Here?
Look,
BJ and Dave are on the pro.
You guys think?
Okay. We think it doesn't deserve.
Yeah. No, doesn't deserve.
We're
saying it does deserve to be called the Christmas song because A. Who is to say that anybody who titles a song does not deserve? And
us.
B, you snooze, you lose.
That happens all the time that reason... songs get named something and then the public at large says, we're just going to call this something else. You know, sometimes even record companies are like, we're going to call this the lyrics that everyone knows it by because...
That don't do that. They put it in parentheses.
Yeah, they're right.
Which they do on Christmas song, parentheses, chestnuts roasting on an open fire. It's how it's...
Guys,
there's
20 seconds left on the clock and I'm going to take all of them. Some of you listeners know my interest in word origins. And I was looking up the other day about kin, the word kin.
What's going on?
Kin.
I feel so
kindling,
good.
Candle.
I feel a warmth.
All these words come from the same old Norse root. These are the people you gather around a fire with. And that's what Christmas is really all about. Get together in the wintertime with the people that you want to gather around a fire with,
right. Unless you live
roast
in the southern
some chestnuts
hemisphere,
on it,
where it's not
and
the winter.
And that's why it's the Christmas song.
Listen, a lot of Christians in the southern hemisphere.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
By the way,
now
chestnuts roasting on an open fire is the first line.
Guys,
chestnuts roasting on an open fire is the first line of the song. It might be, and I believe it is, the only time it's sung. It's the first line of the song. It is not the refrain. The refrain is Merry Christmas.
Yeah, the song. The refrain isn't the Christmas song. The Christmas song. The Christmas
otherwise, every other song that has the first we should just start walking around calling every song by its first
obviously,
line.
Obviously, there's an extra minute here. When Medina gave us the debate topic, he called the song Chestnuts Roasting on an open fire. If he said the Christmas song does not deserve to be a Christmas song, we'd be like, what's a Christmas song?
Yeah, exactly.
So
also,
that's
not,
the title. And it doesn't
saying,
deserve to be called the
we're
Christmas
not saying
song.
It deserves to be called Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire.
Let's have a favorite Christmas song from everyone.
Oh, the Christmas.
Let's go. Let's start with Dave,
yeah,
least likely to have
easy,
one.
Just Like Christmas by Low is the most beautiful Christmas song of all. Oh. Second favorite is All I Want for Christmas Is You by Mariah Carey.
BJ.
He's not wrong on both of
those. I'm sick of it because everyone does a version of it and you hear it all the time, but Baby, It's Cold Outside.
Baby, It's Cold
Outside. I think Baby, It's Cold Outside, given these new millennial 2015 times, I believe that man is being misogynist. And I believe that he is not letting her leave. And I feel like I don't like that song because that man is
being a gentleman. No,
that man is not being a gentleman. That man is being aggressive. And that man is not giving that woman her choice. I don't like it.
Playing.
She says, I really must go.
Well, she also says it's cool. That's it. I would teach that song in acting class.
He's just being a traditional masculine man, John. He's just embracing
John, what's your favorite Christmas song? My favorite Christmas song is also my saddest Christmas song because I believe that Christmas is a, what do I want to say it is? It's a masochistic embrace of sadness and joy. Actually, the saddest Christmas song is the Charlie Brown Christmas Time.
Healy, what did I tell you?
It's brutally sad.
I couldn't help it.
It's brutally sad.
I was going to list it as one of my favorite Christmas songs.
But it's your favorite because it pushes you right where it hurts.
It's such a feeling.
Right how you need to actually orgasm is when someone hurts you. I know you. I know you, Medina. You drive for 10 hours at a clip. I know you.
Medina, you have a great answer to this.
I believe the answer is off of the Sesame Street Christmas LP. If anybody's ever heard the Sesame Street Christmas album, it's a wonderful record. And it
sounds good.
Horribly sad once you get older because it's just a dying beacon of your childhood just as it begins to just completely just... But the sadness of the holidays is what gives the holidays their energy.
Sure.
And I'm going to sing it for you.
That's a great pull quote.
Healy, don't sing this time.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas.
Sesame Street version.
Kill yourself alone. Send that text that lets that one that can't be here know for sure that by not loving you enough, you've left her there. I think those are the lyrics. I could be wrong.
It has texting?
It has texting in it. Wait.
The Sesame Street version?
I don't remember.
That was amazing.
That is sad. That is not happy.
It's a very
sad song. But we loved it.
John, sad, I don't know if anyone has ever... Maybe no one's ever told you this before. I think you have a very nice singing voice.
Thank you very much. Thank
you. Healy, what's your favorite Christmas song?
Well, I do like the one that John just sang.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas.
You got to give it up to Jingle Bells.
Yeah.
Don't. Are you crazy?
Putting the energy into Christmas.
Two thumbs up to the lyrics of Jingle Bells.
Are you crazy?
Jingle Bells.
In 1938, an asshole sat down to write a song. That song was Jingle Bells. That asshole was whoever it was. By the way, it's the best line of the Great Debates ever.
Thank you very much.
And I believe it was you.
I think
1972,
it was.
1972, an asshole.
But you know, I have a soft spot for Billy Joel. I feel bad calling him.
I know Billy fairly well, and I feel horrible saying his first name because it sounds like I'm putting... But I played with him the other night, and I was on stage with him at the Garden playing with him, and I thought, I got to send a video to these guys. Playing with the piano man. It was equal parts compelling and full of shit. Now, by the way, I'm pointing to Steve when I say compelling, and I'm pointing to Dave when I say full of shit. We were at dinner after the show, and I looked at Billy, and I thought, do I let him know about the Great Debates? Do I let him know about Two Thumbs Up to the lyrics of Piano Man?
He knows. He knows. I think Alex has told him.
He knows.
Dan, take us out of here.
My favorite Christmas song is that song that I think is just called Christmas on the Phil Spector Christmas album. Guys, it's the holidays. I hope you're with your friends. We were with our friends tonight, and it was great.
Gather your kin.
Glad to have you guys back.
Thank you.
Can't wait to do it again. You guys were excellent tonight, as per usual.
We're the adversaries.
Also.
Yeah.
I'm wishing everyone a joyous holiday season.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas, guys. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week on The Great Debates. It was a great pleasure. Talk to you soon.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. Well, I life I love is making music with my friends. And I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again. Going places that I've never been. Seeing things that I may never see again. I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again.